T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. CPA at a descent. Hose control, both autos, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Joining us today on Cosmic Perspective Radio is one of the best-known meteorologists in the Northeast. He's an astronomy enthusiast and has seen several total solar eclipses, Joe Rayo. Joe, thanks for being with us today to discuss this exciting up-and-coming April 8th total solar eclipse. This eclipse will be a little different than the 2017 eclipse. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The folks, for example, out in the western U.S., on up into the Ohio River Valley, the eastern Great Lakes, upstate New York, and finish out in northern New England. And also our friends to the north and south will be sharing in this eclipse with us, parts of northern Mexico and also portions of Canada. In fact, Canada's largest city, Montreal, is in the path of the total eclipse, and the eclipse will sweep out across Atlantic Canada, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and finally come to an end somewhere out in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. So it's quite an event, quite a zone of totality. 32 million people already live within the eclipse track, and I'm sure that there are going to be many, many, many more that are going to be attempting to get into the totality zone in the days leading up to the eclipse.
You've seen several total solar eclipses. How many have you seen total?
13.
After witnessing 13 total solar eclipses, what are some of your experiences that you can share with our listeners that haven't seen a total solar eclipse?
It's difficult to describe because it's, unless you have seen one for yourself, the events that occur during a total eclipse are something quite unique. I mean, how much alien stimulation can your mind process in just 2, 3, 4 minutes? As you lead into the total phase of the eclipse on the ground, you see a number of wavering shadows, bands of shadows. Some people in recent years have called them shadow snakes. They're an atmospheric phenomenon that is caused by the sun being cut down to a thin hairline or narrow filament, and the atmosphere, the turbulent atmosphere, causing these shadows to appear rapidly racing along the ground, what we call shadow bands. Then you look up as the sun moves into totality, and the last little bit of the sun appears as a blob of light outlined over the innermost part of the sun's atmosphere, the corona, producing what in essence is a diamond ring in the sky. The corona itself, which is always there, but you never see it because the sun is so blindingly bright. Now you get a chance with all of the sun covered by the moon to actually see the corona as the shadow of the moon sweeps over you. And it's a great crown, a halo, streaming outward, ragged at the edge, streaks running through it. You also get a chance to see tongues of hydrogen gas leaping off of the surface of the sun, the prominences, which go many thousands of miles up into space, visible along the darkened limb of the moon as totality sets in. And then after 3 or 4 minutes, everything goes in reverse. The diamond ring returns. The corona disappears. Oh, by the way, also, it gets dark. It gets about as dark during a total eclipse as it does 30 or 40 minutes after sunset or 30 or 40 minutes before sunrise, dark enough so that you can perceive a few of the brighter stars and certainly the brighter planets. Two of them will stand out like sore thumbs in the sky, Venus to the lower right of the sun and Jupiter well off to the upper left. And again, all of these things happening within a time span of just a few minutes. And it is simply an amazing spectacle. In fact, I'm going to tell all of your listeners right now, I want all of them after this interview is over to sit down and write their bucket lists down on a piece of paper and send them to me. And after I get those bucket lists, I'm going to look at them. And if I don't see on any of those bucket lists a total eclipse of the sun, I will use a black Sharpie pen, cross out something on your bucket list, and add total solar eclipse. In short, you have to see a total eclipse of the sun before you finish out your time here on Earth. It is stunning. It is an absolutely spectacular event that no one should miss. Before you pass through life, you should see at least one total solar eclipse, and all of us will get that chance on the second Monday of April this year.
I witnessed my first one in Casper in 2017. Being an amateur astronomer myself for several years, I've seen incredible things. That I've seen Venus transit the sun twice. I've seen aurora. I've seen the central bulge of the Milky Way galaxy. And you put all those things together, and a total solar eclipse, I believe, beats them all.
Well, yes. Total eclipses of the sun. I have never heard anyone say after a total eclipse of the sun, that was all right. It got dark. No, I've never heard anybody say that. What I have heard people say after witnessing a total eclipse is, especially if it's their first total eclipse, if they were a virgin, so to speak, before the eclipse hit totality, the thing you hear after every total eclipse is, oh God, I got to see another one of these. I've got to see another one. This was absolutely amazing. Or for people like myself, veterans who have seen more than a few, the parting line is, it never gets old. It never, ever gets old. It is an event that you have to see. You become very quickly addicted to total eclipses after you've seen your very first one because, again, it is an absolutely amazing sight.
First time I spoke to you about a total solar eclipse was before I had seen one myself. And you said to me, go look at a video of a total solar eclipse, but don't look at the video. Just listen to their reactions to the total solar eclipse. And that's really a great thing for people to do, because it is just inspiring. It's something that, like you say, you should be on everybody's bucket list. And if you listen to what everyone says without even watching the video, you'll know you should go and see a total solar eclipse.
Well, it's something that you, I think unofficially, if you're with a group of people, especially when you're in a large group of people, as soon as the total phase starts, as soon as the sun goes into totality, it seems that everybody has to, for the first 20 or 30 seconds, scream their heads off, because it's an event that, again, you have never quite seen in your entire life. And then after the initial shouts and screams are over, it's interesting. Everybody goes into a quiet period where you either are looking around at the alien sights that you have not seen in your life before, or if you have seen it before, you're seeing it again, or a quiet sort of happiness that you're, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to take in so many events that are taking place all at once. You're looking around the horizon at the various colors. A friend of mine, British astronomer Guy Otwell, once said that in Indonesia, he was going to attempt to make a painting of a solar eclipse, and he was flummoxed, he was frustrated, because during the middle part of the eclipse, he said, I was looking around and looking at colors which had no name. The best I can use in terms of describing colorations is near the horizon, saffron, or maybe the color of an iodine or beer bottle. These are colors you don't see during your standard sunrise or sunset. And again, all of these things are happening and changing moment by moment as the shadow is passing over you at roughly 2,000 or 3,000 miles per hour. This is, after all, the shadow of the moon cast upon the surface of the Earth, about 120 miles wide in this particular upcoming eclipse, and it's moving at such a tremendous speed, and that's why a total eclipse cannot last for very long. It at most can last in the most extreme case, 7.5 minutes. This eclipse will last at its most extreme in the United States down in South Texas for 4 minutes and 27 seconds. But even if you're up in upstate New York or in northern Maine, the eclipse will still manage to last, if you're right in the middle of the total path, 3 minutes and 45 seconds, which is a pretty good length for a total solar eclipse. When you consider that some people travel halfway around the world to simply get into the zone of totality for an eclipse that might only last 5, 10, 15, 30 seconds, and now here's one that's going to last for several minutes, well, it's an opportunity that you should take full advantage of. So it's all I could say is, when that day approaches and as it comes, I hope that everybody who's listening right now does find a way to get into the zone of the total eclipse. Well, I did an article for space.com recently, and I looked at all of the total eclipses of the sun that occurred over the United States over the last 100 years. And there have been 14 total eclipses that have occurred over that 100-year time span. And then what I did was I averaged out all of the specifics about each eclipse, the width of the moon shadow or the eclipse track, and most notably the duration of totality and how high up the sun was at maximum during the total phase of the eclipse. This eclipse coming up in April beats all of them by far and away. In some cases, for example, there were eclipses, like there was one in 1945 over Montana and the Dakotas that had the sun just barely above the eastern horizon right after sunrise. And that eclipse lasted maybe 20 or 30 seconds. The average for those 14 eclipses, the average duration of totality is about 2 minutes. And here, as I just mentioned, this eclipse in its most extreme case down in Texas will last 4.5 minutes, and it will be way, way up high in the sky, like 70 degrees high. Well, my goodness, compared to all the other United States eclipses, this one, again, has them all beat. And this one is going to be the one that's going to stand out. We have not had, actually, a total eclipse. There's been no total eclipse that is comparable to this one passing across parts of the United States, going all the way back to 1806. In 1806, there was one that crossed through New York State and New England that lasted about almost 5 minutes. That was amazing. But we have not had anything close to that up until now. And this is the one that will be, again, not quite matching that 1806 eclipse, but it'll be the best one since 1806. And then after this one in 2024, the next one that will be able to match up against this eclipse will be not too far down the road. Some of your listeners, and I hope myself, and I hope you will be around in August of 2045, August the 12th, 2045, that will be another coast-to-coast eclipse. It'll hit the Pacific coast, I believe near California, move across the country, and exit in Florida. In fact, the peak duration of the eclipse is going to occur, get this now, near Disney World in Orlando. 6 minutes and 6 seconds of totality in 2045. So until we have that eclipse come along in 2045, this again will be the best eclipse for the United States territories going all the way back to 1806. And if you're wondering when the next one is going to occur over the United States, the year before that 2045 eclipse, there'll be one over parts of Montana and the Dakotas, but that's going to happen right before sunset, very low in the sky again in 2044, August the 23rd, 2044. And that one will only last for about 100 seconds. So they're going to be few and far between after this, unless you plan to do some traveling elsewhere around the world for a total solar eclipse.
An incredible opportunity for all of us here. Here in the Northeast, and particularly in the tri-state area, we won't get 100% of totality. We're not in the path of totality. I'd like you to explain to our listeners the difference between a 90-some-odd percent eclipse and a total solar eclipse.
I use the following analogy. If, for example, you decide to stay in the tri-state New York area for this upcoming eclipse on April the 8th, what you will see is 91% of the sun's diameter covered. Now, you may say to yourself, well, Joe, 91%? That's a heck of a lot of the sun that's going to be covered. So really, there isn't any more need for me to travel up into the zone of totality. 91% is good enough for me, right? No, wrong. It is not. It is, in fact, I would equate this to if you plan to go to the Super Bowl. And if you have a ticket for the Super Bowl, you will, of course, be able to go into the stadium, sit down in a nice, comfortable seat, and watch the Super Bowl happening before you. You'll get the full feeling of being able to say afterwards, I have been to the Super Bowl. If you are in the zone outside of totality, it's like you're going to the Super Bowl. It's like you are parked your car in the parking lot. And that's about it. That you're not going to be able to get any closer to the Super Bowl. Certainly, you will not be able to see the event. You might be able to partake in some of the little pre-game festivities outside. You know, people who set up a barbecue, whatever. But that's about it. You may be able to hear the cheers from inside the stadium, but you're not really getting much out of that either. And so that's what like being in the partial eclipse zone is. You're going to be so, so close, but you're going to be missing the main event, really. So if you stay in the New York area, it's going to get a little dark. The sky, if it's a nice sunny blue sky, the blue will get a little bit more intense. And again, it will be getting a little darker. It'll look kind of strange, maybe a counterfeit twilight, if you will, but it will not be the full effect of a total eclipse of the sun. You're not going to see stars pop out. You're not going to certainly see the corona appear. You're not going to see those weird looking colors encircling the horizon. And you're certainly not going to be able to see the rush of the lunar shadow moving in over you and then past you during the peak phase of the eclipse. It'll be interesting, no question about that. But it's something that just really, literally, it's like night and day. You're still going to be in daylight for a partial eclipse, however large, as opposed to being in the zone of totality.
If some of our listeners haven't made arrangements, and that we're pretty close to being to the path of totality, what would you recommend to them if they have made arrangements to get into the path of totality at this point?
Well, if you live in New York State or much of the Northeast, the eclipse, the total eclipse path, is only going to be, I would say, anywhere from 2 to 4 hours by car. And when you consider that there are scientists who have traveled halfway around the world to get into the zone of total eclipse, and have spent a great deal of time and a great deal of money to get into the zone of totality. And here you are, here you sit, only 2, 3, 4 hours away by car. I mean, why would you say to yourself, well, I'm not going to do it. It is worth it. It is worth every, I mean, should you spend a little bit of money? Should you spend a bit of time in your car to travel to see an event that really at its peak is not going to last longer than 3 or 4 minutes? Is it really worth it? Yes, because once you get into that zone of totality and you see it, that's something that's going to stay with you and you're going to remember for the rest of your life. So you should. Now, in terms of, you say, well, I'm here, maybe I ought to get a hotel room. That's going to be a little tough. I would think by now, virtually every hotel, every Airbnb in the zone of total eclipse has been taken. I might be wrong. There might be places, there might be hotels or motels with a vacancy sign that's up. But again, they're going to be very few and far between. You can get on your phone right now and try making phone calls to anywhere within the totality path, and they're going to probably tell you, I'm sorry, everything is booked April 6th, 7th, 8th. The person on the line may tell you, oh, I do have bookings afterwards. So there's lots of bookings for April the 9th and 10th. What's good is that? That's after the eclipse is over. Or if you do find a hotel or motel that does have a vacancy, let's say you find a Motel 6, a place that's going to leave the light on for you. Usually a Motel 6 charges you what for a night stay at a hotel? $75, $100 per night or whatever. I guarantee you, you find a hotel, even a Motel 6, they're probably going to say, oh, okay, you want April 7th or April the 8th? That'll be $500, sir, or $700, sir, because they take full advantage of the fact that they know that those hotel rooms are going to be few and far between, and they're going to try and get as much out of that as they possibly can. This, by the way, is not new. When I was doing radio, reporting on radio stations, and sometimes I would go to a space shuttle launch, you would find that just before a launch, the towns around Cape Canaveral, Titusville, Cocoa Beach, those places that had hotels, those hotels were charging an arm and a leg for you to get a room. Again, they knew, they took full advantage of the fact that they knew that a lot of people were going to be coming And a lot of people wanted a hotel room by hook or crook and were willing to pay whatever they could to get that room. Same thing with the total eclipse. Unfortunately, if you haven't made reservations yet and you find a hotel room or a motel room available, you're going to probably pay through the nose to get that room. As far as me, I've made hotel reservations all along the eclipse track, but I made them more than a year ago when most hotels were unaware of what event was going to be taking place on April the 8th of this year.
Being in the tri-state area here, I don't know if you heard about this, Joe, but I heard that Amtrak from the city will be going to places where the path of totality, I believe Rochester, I'm not sure about Buffalo, but certainly Rochester, New York, where I know several people I spoke to said, you know, I can't afford to take 2 days off from work, and they know they're going to get gridlocked with this traffic coming back. So if that is the case, I would look into it, but I believe there is, I don't know if you've heard about that or not, but I believe Amtrak is going to have a train that you can go back and forth on the same day if there's still seats available.
Well, that's very smart, because there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be in their cars, and a lot of the major roadways, I'm sure, are going to be jammed, especially on the morning of the eclipse. For example, here in New York, the most direct way to get into totality is to get on Interstate 87. And I'm pretty sure that as you near the zone of totality, you're going to be running into a lot of traffic, and probably the same is going to hold true after the eclipse is over. A lot of people will be heading home on these roadways, and they're going to find themselves hitting a lot of traffic. So it's good that you are taking perhaps a railroad, going on Amtrak, for example, or maybe taking a bus. I would suggest that if you do that, though, if you go take a bus, that you do go up the day before the eclipse, because I'm sure that even if you take a bus, the bus is going to get stuck in traffic too, trying to get into the zone of totality. And I have heard also of aircraft. A couple of carriers have said, hey, how about coming on board? We'll fly above the clouds and we'll see the eclipse from above the clouds. But in looking at the logistics for those airlines that are planning to do that, I'm saying, will you be able to see the eclipse? Because I've seen 5 eclipses from aircraft. And in all 5 cases, we had the situation where the sun was visible directly straight out the window, because the sun was at a relatively low altitude, 10 or 15 degrees above the horizon. Well, I saw one particular carrier say, we're flying out of Dallas, Texas, and we're going to get a beautiful view of it. Are you? Do you really think you are? From Dallas, Texas, the sun is going to be 65 degrees high in the sky. Now, if you take a plane, yes, you will be above the clouds if there are any clouds on eclipse day. But the problem is that the standard airline window is such that at the top of the window, that's equivalent to 30 degrees. If anything is higher than that, you're going to have to put your face up against the window and try to see up, up, up. And at 65 degrees, I think it's going to be quite impossible for you to see the sun. So you say, well, maybe they'll bank the plane. If they bank the plane, they're going to have to bank that plane maybe 30 degrees. And I know from experience and talking to previous airlines that have seen eclipses, I said, what happens? They have to bank the plane to see, to get a better view. Oh, no, we can't do that. Not for an extended period of even several minutes. That's a safety issue. So I don't know. Will these carriers that are promising you a view of the total eclipse, will they bank the plane for the length of totality? Will you have to, when you're sitting in your plane, if they bank it to bring the sun up or bring the window up to face the sun, you're going to have to, you're watching it and all of a sudden you're going like, like that, you know? Will you be able to, will they do something like that? Or will they do barrel rolls during that? I have no clue what they plan. I've spoken to several people who have already stupidly plunked their money down. It's going to cost anywhere from $500 to $1,000 on some of these flights. And I'm saying, why did you do that? Did you find out from the carrier, will you be able to see the total eclipse? Will you be able to see the sun during totality? Or will you have to settle for simply looking as the shadow passes across the landscape and seeing it get dark outside your window? I mean, that'll be interesting, but what fun is that if you're going to be missing the main show, the total eclipse, the sun's corona? It's a no-brainer. And, you know, you have to be very careful when promises are made for such eclipse expeditions, so to speak.
I'm glad you mentioned that to our listeners, because the average person, particularly one who hasn't seen one before, wouldn't realize that.
I could just imagine somebody who's plunked down like $500 or $1,000, and then after the eclipse is over, go up to somebody from a representative from the airline and say, well, where was the sun? I wanted to see the sun. I know it got dark, and I saw the colors near the horizon, but where was the sun? I came here to see the sun. And, you know, sorry, sir, but, you know, we only could go so far. You know, that's crazy.
It's a lot of money to spend to be in the parking lot of the Super Bowl, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Precisely.
I'd like to talk a little bit about a safety of viewing the sun. Of course, looking at the sun, you can go blind or have permanent damage to your eyesight. Can you tell our listeners some safe ways of taking a look at the sun during the eclipse?
Well, somebody out there may say, well, I'm all set for the eclipse. I've got a pair of really dark sunglasses, and I'll use that to look at the eclipse. And maybe you can look at the sun through those dark glasses. The problem with that is that the sunglasses are only doing one thing, cutting down on the visible part of the sun's light. The sun emits quite a bit of radiation in all parts of the spectrum. And so while you may be cutting down on the visible part, what is getting through those sunglasses are the ultraviolet and infrared rays of the sun. The invisible rays that, well, in the case of the ultraviolet rays, that's the rays that give you a sunburn after 10 or 15 minutes on a hot summer day. And the infrared, well, that interacts with the blacktop on your driveway to help melt the snow. Do you really want to have those invisible rays hitting the retina of your eye? And unfortunately, there are no nerve sensors in your eye. So you're looking at the sun and you're looking at it through those dark glasses. But meanwhile, your eyes are being burned without you immediately being aware of it. So you need to take special precautions. You can purchase online. If you go on Amazon.com, you can purchase special solar eclipse glasses. They look like the old 3D glasses mounted in cardboard that you used to get during those chintzy 3D movies from the 1950s and 60s, except in this case, those glasses contain a special plastic called polymer or mylar. Those plastics actually are able to reflect not only the visible, but also the infrared and ultraviolet radiations and allow you to look safely at the sun with those glasses. There's a company out in California. You can look them up on Google. Very strange name for a company that manufactures eclipse glasses, but the name of the company is Rainbow Symphony. Rainbow Symphony has been manufacturing eclipse glasses for over three decades, and they do not just eclipse glasses mounted in cardboard, but you can get very fancy glasses, almost looking like sunglasses in plastic mounts. The cost of these glasses range anywhere from a few dollars to, if you want to get fancy with the plastic mountings, maybe $15 or $20. But in all cases, whether you get them from Amazon or Rainbow Symphony, and the Farmer's Almanac too, by the way. The Farmer's Almanac has been manufacturing eclipse glasses. You can get four glasses in a four pack for like 12 bucks. So it's not expensive. And, you know, you're only spending a few dollars to keep your vision during totality. Again, many, many people over the years have been blinded because of the fact that they were looking at the sun with insufficient filtration. They were looking at it through sunglasses. They were looking at it through smoked glass. People used to take a piece of glass, a pane of glass, and put it over a candle and build up a sheet of carbon, so to speak, blackening the glass and looking at the sun through the smoked glass. Unfortunately, while that cuts down on the visible, it allows some of the infrared and ultraviolet to go through. So don't use smoked glass. You can use a welder's goggle or welder's glass, but you need to get the right type of welder's glass. Welder's glass or safety glass number 13. Welder's glass comes in various numbers. 13 will give you just the right view of the sun, and welder's glass also bounces off the infrared and ultraviolet radiations. If you get something a number lower than 13, like 11 or 10 or 8, the sun will be much, much too bright, and that'll make it unsafe to look at. If you get something higher than a shade 13 for welder's glass, let's say shade 14 or 15, you'll still be able to see the sun, but very, very dimly. The thicker or the higher the number, the thicker the glass, or the denser the glass, and the less light will get through. So welder's glass number 13, lucky number 13, that is something you should use for welder's glass viewing if you're going to plan to view the eclipse through welder's glass. Also, interestingly, through welder's glass, the sun appears green. So if you ever wanted to see a green sun, wasn't the green sun visible from Krypton? The Superman came from the planet Krypton. He had a green sun. You got to get a chance to see the total eclipse or the partial phase of the eclipse. and it will look green. Incidentally, during totality, take those glasses off. Discard the welder's glass, because only during total eclipse, only during those few minutes when the sun is totally covered, can you look directly at the sun with your eyes, with binoculars, or even especially with a telescope. Don't do that even when the sun is cut down to a slim crescent, because even the slimmest of crescents can still pose a distinct problem and an issue for your eyes. But when the sun is in totality, I remember on a celebrity cruise, eclipse cruise in 1998 in the Caribbean, and we all had our eclipse glasses and we're watching the sun get cut down to a crescent, and then all of a sudden, here's totality. And everybody, of course, screaming their heads off, oh, look at that, look at that. And you're able to look directly at the sun at that time. And there was one woman who was a few feet away from me. She still had her glasses on. And she's looking up in the sky with the glasses and said, I don't see anything. What's going on? I don't see a darn thing. And I actually had to run over to her. And I said, take those glasses off. Take them off. Take a look. And she took the glasses off. And just like Rosanna Dana from Saturday Night Live, oh, that's much better. Never mind. So during totality, remove the glasses. But when totality is over and the sun is coming back, put those glasses back on. And if you don't have glasses, you can use other methods of looking at it. You can project the image of the sun from a telescope, aim the telescope at the sun. Don't look through the telescope, but you know, work it around so that you can aim the telescope directly at the sun, and then take a white sheet of cardboard or paper and put it behind the eyepiece and project the image. It's an enlarged image of the sun. Hey, if the sun has sunspots that day, you'll be able to see not only the projected image of the partial phases, but also you'll be able to see the sunspots on the sun. You'll see the moon as it moves along, cover the sunspots, and then later uncover the sunspots. If you don't have a telescope or binoculars to project the image, you can do it by using just a pinhole. Poke a pinhole in a piece of cardboard and then hold the pinhole out at arm's length and project the pinhole image onto a second sheet of paper. If you don't have that, go to a tree. The little spaces between the leaves of the tree act as pinhole projectors, and you can look down on the ground beneath the tree and see the ground underneath the tree is dappled, if you will, by scores or even hundreds of images of the partially eclipsed sun on the ground. If you don't have a tree, if a couple of pieces of cardboard, if you don't have glasses, if you don't have anything, then go into your kitchen and see if you have a Ritz cracker or a saltine cracker. They have little teeny holes in them. And I've seen people actually project the sun through the holes in the cracker onto a white screen. So there are a wide variety of ways that you can project the image and see the partial eclipse safely during the partial stages. Even a mirror. A lot of women who are listening to me right now who have a compact, and they have a mirror in the compact, use that mirror. You can aim the mirror up at the sun. Don't, of course, look at the mirror when you're projecting the image of the sun, but have the sun hit the mirror and then project the image of the sun 40, 50, 60 feet away onto the wall of a building or onto a screen or whatever. And there's the partial eclipse visible by simply projecting the image using a mirror. Again, there's a wide variety of ways that you can do this and do it safely so that you don't end up blinding yourself, which, again, sadly, a lot of people have done in the past by not looking at the sun correctly during the people. But by the way, people think that it is the eclipse that is dangerous. I once took a phone call on behalf of the Hayden Planetarium. They were sending calls to me about an eclipse that was coming up. And some guy called up, and I still remember this phone guy. He said, I have a question about the eclipse. And I said, yes, what do you want to know? He says, can you tell me when the eclipse is going to end? And I looked at the time, and I said, yeah, the eclipse will come to an end tomorrow at 2:54 p.m. 2:54. Now, let me just write that down. 2:54. So that's when it's going to be over. And the eclipse is all over after that. I said, yes. He said, okay, that's good. That means after 2:54, I can look at the sun, right? Wrong. It's not the eclipse. It's the sun. The sun is dangerous all the time. You are not to look at the sun at any, I mean, who stands outside and stares up and looks at the sun for 20, 30, 40 seconds? Nobody does that. Of course not. But then when you hear on television and on radio or read in the newspaper, hey, there's going to be an eclipse of the sun. Then all of a sudden, here comes the curiosity factor. Oh, there's going to be an eclipse. And that's when people stare and look up at the sun. That's when they find out very quickly that that's a no-no. So it's not the eclipse, it's the sun that's dangerous, and so you need to use the projection methods or those special filtration methods to observe the eclipse, lest you put your eyesight in danger.
Joe, thanks so much for all those ideas. I have to say one thing, I have never heard of the Ritz cracker. I've heard of all of them, but that's incredible that the holes in the Ritz cracker would be one way of viewing the total solar eclipse.
Yes.
But I'm glad you told people that even at 99 point something percent, you still have to have those glasses on. And I don't think a lot of our listeners would understand that. I'm glad you explained that as well. It's really important.
Well, the term diamond ring, by the way, the diamond ring effect that appears for a few seconds before totality sets in or a few seconds after totality, you can look at that visually. There's really not enough sun for you to put your eyesight in danger. And it's interesting to note that in 1925, a total eclipse of the sun passed across New York City, but the line of totality was right across 96th Street in Manhattan. People who lived north of 96th Street, upper Manhattan and into the Bronx, saw the total eclipse. What are the people who were in Midtown? What did they see? There, it was a partial, but it was a 99.8, 99% 0.9 partial eclipse. And what they saw was, in essence, a diamond ring in the sky, but it lasted more than a few seconds. In fact, it lasted maybe 10 times longer, 20 or 30 seconds, because that one little blob of light kind of pivoted around from one end of the crescent or one end of the sun to the other. They got to see the innermost corona forming the ring. And after the eclipse was over, people who lived in lower Manhattan, Brooklyn, Midtown Manhattan, who saw that, said, why didn't anybody tell us that that was going to be visible to us? We thought it would just be one big blinding area of light that we couldn't see. But in essence, they did see the verge, right on the edge of total eclipse, even though they were not in totality. And everybody said, well, it looked like an engagement ring, a diamond ring in the sky. It looked like a diamond ring. And in the New York Times the next day or the day after, they had an article saying the scientists blew it. They forgot to tell everybody about the diamond ring. And the article said that this term, hitherto unknown to astronomy, suddenly became commonplace later that day and later that night. Everybody was talking about the diamond ring, and that was, again, 99 years ago, 1925. And so that is where the term diamond ring came from the total eclipse that was visible over New York in 1925, January, from people who didn't quite venture into totality, but they were just outside of the zone of totality and got to see a prolonged diamond ring effect. So if you don't make it into totality, if you're a mile or two or three outside of totality, you'll still have something to see nonetheless. And by the way, people in Toronto, Canada, and people in Cincinnati, Ohio, they will have a 99 point whatever eclipse. And so they won't get into totality, but they may very well see a prolonged lasting diamond ring effect for maybe 10, 15, or 30 seconds, like the people in New York did back in 1925.
So it'd have to be a very high percentage, very close to 100%, a 99 point something for you to actually see,
right?
Take the glasses right off. And so anybody in the 90, 95 range or 97, no.
I was here in 19, I did not get a chance to see the total eclipse of 1970, which passed 75 miles south and east of New York City, out in the Atlantic Ocean. I was only 13 years old then. I asked my mom, I said, how much would it cost to hire a boat or charter a boat? No. So I had to stay in New York, and I saw a 96% partial. Interesting. It did get a bit dark. It did have a kind of a dusky twilight for a couple of minutes, but no diamond ring, no corona, no stars, no shadow bands, nothing. It was so close, but we missed out. Don't miss out on this opportunity. This time the path of totality relative to New York is down out in the ocean. This time it's to the north and to the west. So if you can get to Buffalo, if you can get to Rochester, Syracuse, Plattsburgh, Watertown, or if not in New York State, Cleveland, Ohio, the mistake by the lake, or Erie, Pennsylvania, or Burlington, Vermont, all of these places are going to be in totality and is well worth your time and effort to position yourself to get a chance to see the total eclipse of the sun on April the 8th, weather conditions, of course, permitting.
Joe, thanks so much for being with us today. Is there a place that you would recommend our listeners to go to on the internet to get more information about the eclipse itself?
Well, interestingly, New York State is making a big deal out of this. I guess Governor Hochul and the folks at the I Love New York committee have gone all out. In the days leading up to the eclipse, I'm sure that you're probably going to see commercials on television or hear them on radio telling people or inviting people to see the total eclipse in New York. In fact, the motto is in New York State, see the eclipse, stay for New York. These are for people who are other than in New York State. If you go on Google and just type in New York State, comma, eclipse, or I Love New York, comma, eclipse, you'll come to a big website that they have put together showing you maps of the zone of totality, times, and specific places that are going to be in the total eclipse zone that you may want to see, either prior to the eclipse or after the eclipse. Hey, Niagara Falls is going to be in the zone of totality. Can you imagine taking a trip on the Maid of the Mist and having a view of the Niagara Falls during a total eclipse of the sun? Well, any case, this is just an example of what New York is doing. And there's another website, Great American Eclipse 2024. It's put together by a friend of mine, Michael Zeiler, who has maps, who has charts, who has information about safely watching the eclipse. You can go on again, greatamericaneclipse.com, and get all the information you want for other places along the eclipse path and find out about it there. And again, New York State has got its own website to tell you about the best areas to observe the eclipse in the Empire State.
Joe, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being with us today. I look forward to seeing you at the Northeast Astro Forum. You'll be there April 20th and 21st, and I hope to have you come by as a guest and visit us at the Cosmic Perspective radio booth. Love to hear your experiences after seeing the total eclipse on April 8th.
I hope we'll have stories that we can swap and tell, and I hope we won't have stories about seeing how unusual it was to see the cloudy sky get dark and then bright again. Let's hope that doesn't happen, but let's hope that we will all have a great opportunity and clear skies so that we can all enjoy. For many who don't particularly care to travel, like scientists and astronomers or umbrophiles, eclipse chasers, this may be their first and only shot, once in a lifetime, to see a total eclipse of the sun on April the 8th.
Joe, thanks so much again. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Panaros production.